Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Well, welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, Mr. Dave Birthday Martino.
Oh, thank you, Al.
Well, I have to keep reminding you that you're a year older.
Yeah, 35. Oh, wait a minute, 53.
Yeah, I was going to say 35. Even I wouldn't believe that.
I turned it around.
Yeah. Yeah, you're 35 almost times two.
That's right.
Not yet. Well, that's good. I mean, you got through another birthday and
yeah.
You do anything special?
We just got some hibachi.
You're not supposed to be swearing on air.
I
hibachi? About
it. Just some food.
Well, I figured it was food. I guess I'm just out of touch. I didn't even hibachi. Isn't that what they called that old barbecue you could pick up for $20 cheap? Hibachi?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway. That's right. Well, I'm a cheap date.
We know that.
It's not that cheap anymore.
No, inflation.
No.
Well, let's see. What do we got going on today? So now today we have another author and he's got a new book out. Now this book is creating a lot of stir here. See a lot of stir, and people are excited and happy.
Yeah.
And so we've got the author here. Now the book is Anna O. It's a novel and it's Matthew Blake. So thank you for coming on the show, Matthew.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, appreciate it. Well, so Matthew, before we get into the book, how did you get into this wild and weird world of writing? What made you do that?
Well, it's always been a long-standing ambition of mine. Straight out of college, out of university, I was a speechwriter for politicians. So did that for about 10 years, did some screenwriting, some TV stuff, but always wanted to write a book. So I've always been in writing, but I didn't want to write a book until I had a idea big enough for a book. And I think when I got to Anna O, that I finally felt like I got an idea that was worthy of a novel.
Wow. So speech writing for politicians. So you got really good at writing fiction.
I did. I mean, they're lying convincingly.
Yeah. That's really good training. Actually, that's what, people should take courses in that rather than.
Yeah. No, I think also you learn a lot. I mean, I imagine it's like being a journalist or something, that you learn not to be boring, that you've got to get an audience's attention, that to think of the audience and how things are landing. So, yeah, it was great training, great thing to do in your 20s. But the book was always the dream. So I finally got there.
Yeah. Well, and it's important. You want to keep the tension on each page. There's got to be something exciting almost on every page, right? Yeah. So I guess the speech writing is really good. It is really good training for that because you got to keep everybody engaged.
Exactly. And you've got to put your point across in a sort of punchy way and in a way that's sort of catchy and grabs people's attention. So I think for a thriller writer in particular, it's a great discipline. It sort of knocks any pretentiousness out of you.
Now, screenwriting, now that's different again too, right? Because you write a screenplay much different than you would write in a novel, because it's not the same. You have to be a lot more descriptive in your novel, don't you?
Yes, yeah. I mean, it is different. I mean, I think the things I got from it and learned from it and took were getting that idea, you know, that sort of elevator pitch that people always talk about in, certainly in commercial fiction, thriller writing, boiling down an idea until you can say it in one sentence and really thinking about it in a commercial way. I think TV is very good for that, because you've got to go into a room and pitch it to producers and, you know, be interrogated about it. So it really starts training your mind in terms of having a story idea or having a character idea, but then packaging it up in a way which is sellable. So I think that was great training too.
This is an interesting question I always like to ask, is how you decided that this story was good enough to pitch and write. Like you said, you're waiting until you get the right idea and you put it together. Was there a particular thing that propelled you into, let's say, shipping this out to different agents and publicists and people to say, hey, look at this, I want you to read it?
Well, I think it was particularly coming across the idea of people who of sleepwalking, sleep crime, this whole world of people's eyes being opened but their brains being asleep, and people committing murder while sleepwalking, and then resignation syndrome, which is the other thing in the novel, of people falling into a deep sleep for years on end. And I couldn't believe no one had done a big thriller about it before. So I was convinced when I had the idea that someone must have done it and I'd somehow missed the book. But I searched around and I, you know, read very deeply in the genre. So I thought I would have seen it if someone had done it. And when I realized they hadn't, I was amazed and thought, gosh, I better get going, because the idea is so interesting that if you can execute it well, there's a great thriller in there.
Right. So you started with the idea and then you created the characters that were going to play in it. I'd imagine that's the way it went.
It was, yeah. I mean, I started with the idea, started doing the research process. Obviously, it's quite a high concept idea. So there was a lot of research involved in terms of getting that authenticity, landing it, making sure that the reader would absolutely buy into the authenticity of all the things I was talking about. And through that, I sort of met a lot of interesting people, researched a lot of interesting real forensic psychologists and sleep specialists, and started basing characters on these people I met. And that's how the characters of Ben, who's the forensic psychologist, and Anna, who is the patient, that's how those characters really started to evolve.
I'd imagine that research is probably what took you the longest. I mean, sorting it out, plus deciding who you would go see and how you would kind of address these different people that you needed to get information out of.
It was, yeah. The research process was a long period of time, probably about a year, I'd say. It's I'm very pleased that in the book that everything in there has happened or could happen. So it's all absolutely based on real life. And lots of readers have said that they've gone down sort of Google rabbit holes as they realize all this stuff is actually true, all these mystery illnesses and these sort of weird and wacky things. And I think it's clarified in my mind that the truth is always stranger than anything a thriller writer could come up with. You know, it's when you go out there and start searching, it's amazing what is actually out there. And you've almost got to put it on the page and make it believable, despite the fact that all of it's actually real.
Well, how did you get into the mind of your forensic psychologist, Ben, as you mentioned?
Well, there's some great memoirs that have been written by forensic psychologists, by sort of FBI profilers, by all that sort of Mindhunter that happened in the sort of the 90s and the Silence of the Lambs. So I went back to all that stuff, then read all the more recent things about the development of forensic psychology. And it really is just the most amazing area. It's like a sort of modern day Sherlock Holmes, really, in terms of people solving crimes through mind traces and their profiles of the criminal, and such an interesting area. So I basically just immersed myself in all those memoirs and things and talk to interesting people. And yeah, and then out of that, I managed to start thinking, hopefully, as Ben would think, and approach a sort of case as a forensic psychologist would.
And so your character, your main character, Anna O. Ogilvie, yeah. How do you write a character like that? How do you fit into that? And
in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
And how do you experience it? Like, do you hear her, see her? Is it like watching a movie? Like, describe kind of how you write that character.
Well, that was probably the most fun character to write. I think the, so in the book, we have diary excerpts from Anna of the days and events that led up to this terrible attack. She kills her two best friends while sleepwalking and then falls into a 4-year long deep sleep. So we go back 4 years to what led up to this terrible moment. And, those were great fun to write. They really were. They were, I just heard her voice really. And those came quite easily, but, writing in that style, and with her viewpoint and the mystery around it. When we start the book, she's sort of the sleeping killer, really. She's infamous as the Anna Rowe, the person who killed the two best friends, and sort of exploring her biography and, her psychology. That was fantastic to write.
Who is Anna Rowe then? How would you describe that character?
Well, when she committed the crime, she was 25. She's a writer, investigative journalist, and a true crime addict. Throughout her life, has had sleepwalking issues and issues with sleep and occurring at moments of high stress. She's the daughter of a sort of eminent politician mother and a financier father. So, you know, in the center of things. And when we meet her, she's running a sort of small Gen Z magazine, and she's trying to get a big hit, a big break, and starts investigating a true crime story. But she also starts getting these sleepwalking episodes happening again. And so we follow her through that. Then obviously in the main bit of the narrative, the front story, she's been asleep for 4 years. So she has sort of almost unwittingly become this global true crime celebrity known all over the world because of the sort of infamous nature of her case. And because people are divided over whether she really did carry out the double murder or whether there's some other explanation.
You can write about me in the next one. I've been asleep for about 10 years now, and I still think it's 1999, so I don't know what's going on. You know, but I don't think I've killed anybody, but I could have. How's that?
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed, hopefully. Yeah, there's a few, I think. No, so it's kind of an interesting thing. Now, when you write a story like this then, and you're putting this together, is this, you know, it's a great idea, and you've got the character and stuff. Is it purely an entertainment sort of story, or do you have kind of some sort of subtext? Is there some sort of meaning underlying this entertainment story?
Well, I think, I mean, first of all, it is definitely an entertainment story. It's a thriller. It's fast-paced. Lots of short chapters, cliffhangers at the end of every chapter. So I hope it absolutely thrills and entertains. I think that as I got further into writing it, there is a sort of fascinating idea about the link between the mind and the body and the way in which these mystery illnesses, distress in the mind can cause physical distress in the body, and how we understand that, I think is fascinating. And that whole area of psychology and mental health, which is such a huge topic in our world today, I think that is absolutely fascinating. And how we understand how the brain works, but perhaps we don't fully understand and never will how the mind works. And so, yeah, that's there as well. It sort of nods to all those debates. And if people are interested in that stuff, it's all there. But I, first and foremost, it's just a sort of roller coaster ride of a thriller.
Well, did the research and writing of this novel, did it affect your own sleep? Did you ever become anxious of going to bed at night?
It did. I mean, when you read all these case studies and these stories of, you know, perfectly innocent, seemingly blameless people who sort of suddenly wake up and they've murdered someone and they realize they've been sleepwalking and have no idea of it. Yeah, I mean, it definitely preyed on my mind. I mean, it's hard to get that out of your head. So, I would say my sleep worsened as I wrote the book. And it's taken a while since finishing it to sort of get back to normal, if I ever can.
Well, you didn't wake up with a shovel in your hand or something, or muddy shoes by the bed or anything.
Not yet.
No.
We won't tell anyone.
Yeah. It's a possibility here, right? Wow. So are you conscious about how you write the violence in the book? Are you aware of it, or is there any violence in it, or do you stay away from that?
No, there's not much sort of explicit violence. I mean, it's more hinted at and more happens off stage. So yeah, I don't like to sort of shock for shock's sake. I think it's scarier, you know, it's the sort of whole Spielberg Jaws thing, isn't it? That it's the monster is scary if you don't fully see it. And I think that's the same with violence and that sort of threat. So yeah, it's not explicitly on the page, but it's hinted at.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to do it. Let the mind, create what they're scared of go in your mind. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's good. I think someone was this Alfred Hitchcock. I think he was the guy that used to do that.
But, yeah, he was brilliant at that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I think I've heard of him. I don't think I've seen his stuff. Well, that's it. You know, the whole thing is fascinating. I love this. So, but when you're kind of, like you said, it affects your sleep. You're learning a lot about sleep and about all these weird things, and you're writing this tense thriller, and you're kind of getting through this and stuff. And you're hearing your character in a sense. When you do all that and you live this way for a year or however long it took you to put it together totally, when you look back at it, how do you think it affected you, or has it changed you in any way?
Well, yeah, I think it has. I mean, it certainly opened my eyes to how little control we have over the mind. I think when you read about the sleeping sicknesses and the mystery illnesses and the cases, there's a famous case of refugee children in Sweden who get resignation syndrome and fall into a deep sleep and can't be woken up, and the way in which they call it a functional neurological disorder, but it 20 years ago would have been called psychosomatic, and that link between the mind and the body. Yeah, I think it really is extraordinary when you get to understand that and see that even the most eminent neurologists can't really explain why that's happening or are mystified themselves. I think that, is fascinating and terrifying, and particularly on the legal defense of sleepwalking and automatism about, if you kill someone while you're sleepwalking, are you guilty of murder or not guilty? And the law is still very undecided on that. I mean, half the people who use that defense get away with murder. Half who use it get convicted of murder. So no one really knows. And that's always slightly terrifying, but also very mysterious.
See, now, Dave, you're going to have to read this so you can figure out how to do this.
Yes.
get away with
Much
murder.
Defense?
Yeah. Yeah, get away with it.
Only half the time, though.
Well, I mean, it's a chance. It might be worth it. It depends on the
flip of a coin.
Yeah,
it could be in prison for life.
Well, there's not much left.
Well, that's true.
You're 53. Come on.
Yeah.
What do you think that people and the media in general get wrong about sleep and these sleeping sort of things, and people that murder in their sleep, let's say, or walk in their sleep and stuff? What do you think that we in general in the public don't really understand about it?
Well, I think we don't pay enough attention to it. I mean, one of the things that has been so amazing really is when I've gone around booksellers and readers talking about the book is how everyone, given the chance, starts talking about their own sleep stories. Once one person starts, everyone sort of erupts with they know someone who's a sleepwalker or a sleep talker or has night terrors, or sleep eats is another one. It's not something they ever really shared before, but there's this amazing statistic that the average person spends around 33 years of their life asleep. So it is this entire second world that all 8 billion of us on the planet have, and we don't really share much about it or talk much about it. And it's we all have nightmares, we all experience this, and I think we can all be more open about it.
Yeah, and that's a fascinating area too, the nightmares and dreams and stuff. Did you work into that area too as well? Like, how can you separate, let's say, sleepwalking from a dream?
Well, exactly. That's the really scary thing. I think, so I did look into all of that as well. And I talked to one neurologist who said, really, the only way you could tell definitively if someone was sleepwalking or not when they commit a crime is to attach electrodes to their head while they were committing the crime, which is obviously impossible. So basically, even the most eminent specialist would not be able to conclusively tell you whether someone who claims they're sleepwalking was actually sleepwalking when they committed the crime, or whether a nightmare they were having they acted out in reality and killed someone. So I think that the night terrors and nightmares, we've all had that moment when we wake up and the nightmare is still more real than reality, and it takes a while to realize that terrible thing we were afraid of during the night isn't actually real. And the book, I guess, starts with the idea that what if your nightmares turned out to be real?
What's the most surprising thing you learned doing research on this novel with sleep and sleep-related crimes?
The most surprising is how awake we can look while still being asleep. So there were some amazing stories of people who had very bad sleepwalking problems and used to get up in the middle of the night, go for long drives, come back, get back into bed in the morning, have absolutely no memory at all of what they'd done during the night. So you're able to function on a very sophisticated level without actually being awake. It's very, or your rational part of your brain isn't sort of engaged. So that really calls into question our whole concept of being awake or asleep. And so that idea that you can sort of be in an in-between state where you can function, but you're not actually conscious of being awake, that's pretty terrifying.
Story of my life. I'm still trying to figure it out. Well, it's interesting. Where do you think you get your influences from?
I've always been a huge fan of Agatha Christie. She was the sort of first person I ever read where I realized books could be fun and enjoyable. So that's always been a key influence. There's a lot of Hitchcock references in the book. And I certainly say he's a huge influence. But I'm a massive thriller and mystery reader. So I love, you know, Harlan Coben and Michael Connelly and Lee Child and all that stuff. So, a mix of sort of classic crime and lots of modern mysteries.
And so what do you think you get out of the book then? How does it make you feel?
What I get out of it is just joy when readers are surprised by the ending and shocked by the twist and like the characters and just had a good time with it. And as a thriller lover, I know what I get out of reading my favorite thrillers, and it's been just amazing to hear readers all across the world saying they connect with the characters and, you know, that it taps into some anxiety they have of themselves, and, you know, they've had a good and fun reading experience. So that's the main thing.
So what's next? What comes up now after this? This is a big novel to start out with. So where are you going to go after now? Are you starting to write something else already?
I've already written it. Yeah, I'm doing the edits on it now. So hopefully it will be out in 2025. I was looking for another topic that was sort of as big and universal as sleep, and I came across some amazing stuff on false memories. So the second book is all about false memory. It's set in Paris. People estimate that about a third of our most treasured memories didn't happen in the way we remember them. And every time we access a memory, we actually edit it just very slightly. So it's looking at all of that and, doing the final touches to that now, and that should be out next year.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing too, right? Because when you're in the crime world too, right, true crime, a lot of, you can't, you know, they talk about witnesses and stuff and people that see things. It's not really that dependable, is it?
Not at all. And I mean, lots of stuff's coming out now, you know, about eyewitness testimony and if people have been convicted on eyewitness testimony, how unreliable that is, and lots of amazing stuff there. And it's quite a thought, you know, if some of your most personal memories about the past had been sort of edited and adapted in your own head, and that actually the reality was very different. That changes our notion of the past and who we are. So book two looks for all that stuff.
Yeah, because the brain just kind of fills in the blanks, doesn't it, when it does
And connects things that happened years apart and puts them together. And there's one particularly interesting idea about source confusion. So if you're a child and your parents tell you something that happened, you can sort of almost steal that anecdote and it becomes a memory, and you become convinced that actually you were present at something you weren't, and all those sorts of weird tricks of the mind.
Well, who is your favorite type of character to write? Is it like an evil person or someone that's kind of on the edge or doing something wrong, or do you like writing someone good and happy?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I like the sort of unreliable narrator, the person you don't quite trust. I think that's probably the most fun thing to write if you're writing a psychological thriller, and someone who's sort of slightly teasing the reader, leading the reader on, and who the reader, when they're going through the book, doesn't quite know what's being kept from them. And I think that's probably the most compelling type of character to write.
Did your characters ever surprise you? Did they try to take the plot off the rails or anything like that?
Yeah, they did. I mean, I had it pretty well mapped out. So I have, you know, the start and the end mapped out. I think if you're writing a thriller with a big twist, you sort of need to know that you can land that big twist and where it's going. But I always leave enough room for the characters to sort of go their own way and do that sort of thing, and leave a bit of room for spontaneity. So yeah, I'd say the characters do often, and it sounds sort of silly saying they surprise me because I'm inventing them, but they you need to sort of write it to see how that pans out, and some of those relationships and how they the dynamic between the characters certainly can surprise me as the author.
Yeah, don't worry about sounding crazy, because that helps. That sells it even better. Like, crazy.
They sometimes have a mind of their own.
They do. Yeah. They do. No, they do, definitely. If they ever, I think characters who are, you know, they're fully rounded and they're proper characters and you've created them, then, yeah, I think you, I think it's probably more your own unconscious working, you know, Stephen King about the, you know, the boys in the basement or whatever it is, that's your unconscious working. And so when you start writing, the character does things you're not consciously creating.
Right. Well, we have tons of writers that come on and say that, you know, they actually, their characters are real, right? And they talk with them and they're driving and they're doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, and we wonder why the world is this way. It's like they let them drive and have a license. Holy cow. That's crazy.
Yeah, haven't gone that far. Thank you.
Are you outlining your stories, or do you have it all planned and kind of you work it all out and then you fill in details, or you just do it as it comes?
I do a bit of mix of both. So I outline all the sort of the big plot twists, the big points. So beginning, the middle, the end. You know, so I know how to lay all the clues and that it's all gonna fit together, and then. But in terms of how I get from point to point, I try and leave a little bit of room. So every day when I turn up to the desk and write, there's a sort of slight risk factor, a slight excitement that you're making something up as you go. So I find that balance between the two has sort of worked perfectly for me.
Back to political speech writing. Make something up. You know, but you have the foresight. Like when you started putting this together, you had the idea, you got the character stuff. And you were working it out and doing research, and how you saw it back then and how it ended now, how it is published as. Did it turn out kind of where you had it in mind at the beginning, or is it completely different?
No, it's pretty much what I had in mind, I think, actually, particularly the cover it's got. It was very unusually, actually. It's, the cover has been used in almost every territory it's been published in, which is nearly 40 territories. And it's this a sort of iconic image of an eye. And then in every country, the O is a different color. So, I think that look, the branding, the whole package, that was really what I had in mind when I started. And what I was trying to do is find a twist and a surprise that even the most seasoned mystery lover would find surprising. You know, we've got speaking of Agatha Christie and Alfred Hitchcock, I think, you know, they were dealing with audiences that might see, you know, one film a week or one film a month. We've got sort of box sets where people have seen every twist ever done and, you know, are so able to spot where things are going. So my aim with this was to genuinely surprise people and keep people on their toes, and it seems to have done that, which is great.
How do people get in contact with you? Or you've got social media set up? Have you got a website?
Yeah, no, I do, definitely. Okay. So Matthew-Blake.com is the website, but I'm on Instagram at MatthewBlakeWriter and on X at Matthew_Blake.
TikTok?
Not on TikTok. I haven't ventured to yet, but I'm told you've got to let TikTok creators create organically. So, just Instagram and X for the moment.
Well, you get on there and just dance. Hold your book up. And
I don't think I couldn't inflict that on the world. I don't think the world's ready.
Well, sometimes the shock and the drama is what draws them in, right? You know? So this has been a real pleasure. And so the last question I have is, like, who in your real life have you killed off in any of your books?
No one I could admit to. I know. I mean, it's the only people I take from close real life I portray glowingly on the page. So no, there's no one I've inflicted revenge on in that way. I can't say the same for book two, though. We'll have to.
Oh, good. Good. And we'll need names and a phone number. We'll get them on the line when we're interviewing, and you can have it out. You know, that would be amazing. Well, we really
expect nothing less.
Yeah, we appreciate you being here. Now, the book of course is called Anna O. Our guest is the author, Matthew Blake. So thank you for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Matthew.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.